Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Like us, we're quite needy, and comment on everything we post on Facebook. Track us down at facebook.com/TNT Radio Empire. Now get off Facebook and listen to the Todd and Tyler Radio Empire.
So we got no dinner invite from Bobby Slayton last night. I saw you guys on Facebook, you, Colleen, our friend Tony, and his wife. And I know we're friends, but you know, we didn't get an invite.
We never have.
Well,
all the time we've known Bobby.
I'm going to come see the show tomorrow night because it's Bobby Slayton. Yeah,
he has never.
I was afraid you'd bring Todd along because you guys are inseparable. It's like Siegfried and Roy with the Tiger. They go nowhere without the Tiger. First of all, I couldn't invite you last night because Colleen
invited
me.
I'm joking.
She invited me.
Oh, so Colleen should have invited us.
She would have invited you. But here's the problem. You would have brought your wives.
Yeah, exactly.
And how annoying would that have been? You know, I have friends that... you know, if I'm on the road,
yeah.
You know, I very rarely don't go out for dinner because I can't eat before my show.
Right.
So, and then after two shows, Friday, Saturday, very few places are open. So
right.
I'll eat at the club.
Right.
So, but there are times a friend of mine goes, "We want to go out to dinner," and I go, "Yeah, but don't bring your wife." And he go, "Why?" I go, "Because if my wife's not going,
right.
I don't want to be subjected to your wife. She's your problem."
I like that. It's a guy thing. It would be a guy thing.
Well, if there's two wives and they talk to each other.
Right.
You know,
now,
it's like, that's why you have more than one child, so they fight with each other or play with each other.
Off the air, I mentioned this. I want to do something more personal, but on the air, I'll bring it back up. We haven't seen you since you lost your wife. We're very sorry.
Great way to start the show.
I'm sorry, man.
Great.
I
forgot all about that.
You're a dick. You're a dick. Because I said to him off the air, I'll do it on the air. Let's do it on the air.
Right.
I bring it on the air and he calls me out.
Yeah. Well, I know. I lost my wife.
That's what we figured. We'd pass along our condolences and then Bobby would rip us to shreds.
We had never met her, but we heard so many good things about her from you and from Colleen and from other people. And it was shocking that we heard that she passed away. So we're sorry, man.
Well, we were married for 30 years almost.
Right.
But, you know, I went to the shelter, got a rescue wife like a week later. You know, the older ones with no teeth. So it was fine. It was fine. You know, you get to love them.
I saw your Montreal, the Nasty show in Montreal.
Showtime
last year, I think it was. And you were already doing material about your wife's death. How long did it take you to do that?
Well, here was the thing. My wife passed away. God, I can't believe it's been a year and a half already. I'll tell you an amazing story about this. But it was a year and a half. And, you know, about...
This was unexpected, too, by the way.
Yeah, it was very unexpected. Yeah. But, you know, it gets to the point where she won't listen anymore. You got to do something about it. At the 30th, to the moon, Allison. If I bang zoom, to the moon.
You did.
It's a statue of limitations. I should have done that joke for another 6 years.
No, that's okay, but you did a great bit. You do a great bit on stage. I don't know if you do it anymore, but you did a bit about not ever having to see your family before again. And I howled that bit.
Has
the family ever seen that? And you don't care, though.
I don't care. No, but I forgot about that.
You said the best part about your wife dying, you never have to see her family ever again.
Yeah, but
that was your line.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. I have so much material. You know, God, I took the whole summer off of work, too, not because of my wife's death, because I just the comedy clubs were slow in the summertime.
Right. Yeah.
And I wasn't begging for work. I didn't want to go to some horrible clubs. Mm-hmm. And I love coming to the Funny Bone.
Honeymoonhall.com, Bobby Slayton this weekend.
Yeah. Right. There's some clubs I just didn't want to go to, and I had a few crappy offers for a few crappy clubs, and I said no. But getting back to what you were saying about... it took me, I knew when my wife died, a lot of it was about her.
Right, it was.
And, you know, it's about a lot of people.
Right.
But now I'm having a tough time because I hate President Pumpkinhead so much. I have a hard time making fun of Mexicans and transgender people and Arabs and Mexicans. I never liked any of those people. Now I'm on their side. So my act is more...
But, hold it. You've always made fun of those people, but you're also a very liberal dude. I've known you a long time. So you got away with those jokes, but you're right. Now we all hate him.
Yeah, I hate him so much.
So do we.
That now...
So do you get any backlash? Because we get backlash from time to time.
You know, I look, I'm not a political comic. I'm not going to go on every night like Stephen Colbert. He can do it because he's making $10 million a year. It doesn't matter if you're
You're Bobby Slate. You're hammering.
I need all the fans I can get. Right. But I did say some horrible things about that pumpkin-headed douchebag. I mean that in a nice way.
So do we.
I said some things about him on Facebook, and then people, you know, I alienated a lot of people, but it's okay. You got enough idiots in comedy clubs.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I can't draw any less than I do already.
Most comedians are liberal, though, and they deal with it. The fans deal with it.
One group of people that really shocked me during that, and again, I'm not trying to get into politics here, but what was amazing, especially living in L.A., was the Hispanics for Trump. That was a movement that made, not since the Jews for Hitler movement in 1938, did we see a more misguided group of human beings.
I forgot about the Jews for Hitler.
Jews, they didn't last long. But the Mexicans, what's wrong with those people?
You lost your wife a year and a half ago. You took the summer off. Yeah, that sounds like you would have worked if it wouldn't have been the summer.
Okay, I probably would have worked. I do the Montreal Comedy Festival every year, and they decided to go with somebody else to host the show. And I said, it's fine. It's not a giant paycheck. I love being in it.
Right.
But there was something about spending time in my house and not packing and unpacking, packing and unpacking.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm lucky to be working.
Right.
I mean, there's so much. I mean, and it's great to be able to make a living as a stand-up comic after 40 years of doing this.
Right.
So, I mean, you play a place like the Funny Bone, you know, and I'm getting to the point where I'm going, well, I don't want to do two shows tonight, but it's part of the, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
part of the deal.
Part of the deal.
And you'll do one the nights Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday, and one on Sunday, Bobby Slade.
Yes, right. It's a business we've chosen, as I said in The Godfather. Hyman Roth.
Have you started dating again?
Yeah, that's a good... Yeah.
What is your daughter?
Off the air, yes.
Oh, okay. Here... The most amazing story. Okay, so my wife passes away in March. But before she passed away, about 3 months before...
Is this one of the situations, Bobby, your wife was a similar age, same age as you pretty much?
Yeah.
Okay.
All the
crap you've done in your life, and she goes. I mean, you've been, you know, you've partied a little bit.
I party a little bit. I party a lot.
I know, but you've done some crazy stuff in your life.
I'm amazed I'm still alive. Yeah. I think anybody our age
who
dabbled in drugs.
Yes.
Did crazy things. I'm not saying I was living like Keith Richards.
No, no.
But you know, there's a lot of people who do a lot less that die a lot faster
than us.
And you know, people get lung cancer after smoking for a couple of years. My God.
Exactly.
So anyway, I was shocked that she went first. But then I thought, if one of us has to go first, better her than me. I mean, it was one or the other. And then I thought, well, you think
about that's true. One of you has to go first. Now, that's true.
I don't know if you guys have given this any thought. Not that, you know, when I talk to married guys about my wife dying and you say it to me, I don't know. I can't tell if you're sympathetic or jealous. I can't tell the tone in your voice. Look at your face. It's hard to tell because you're married. How long have you been married?
We've been together 20 years. So I've been married 15 of those.
Okay. Yeah, I've been married 15.
So I say 20 years, basically.
Okay, so I was 30.
I know.
It got to the point where you say...
But that's a good line.
You know, yeah.
It's kind of true.
But you got to... Okay, then you got to think, do we want to live together till we're 90?
Right.
Then we're together for 50, 60 years.
Right.
And then it's harder to lose the other one after 50 or 60 years. And then you can't really get a girlfriend when you're 90. I'm 61 and I got this hot 52-year-old girlfriend. I never thought I'd have such a young girlfriend. I can't even keep up with it. She's 52, this broad.
Good for you, man. Yeah.
But here's the
best
part.
How'd you meet her?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to tell you.
Yeah.
So I'm.
That's the one you're pointing at?
Huh?
That the one you're pointing at? That's the one you're dating?
No. That was my grief counselor.
Got it.
That's when the Dennis Hoff introduced me to.
Yeah, Dennis Hoff introduced you to a grief counselor.
Yeah, so she flew into Montreal.
The blonde on the left there, which is grief counselor.
Yeah. Well, that was 3 months after my wife died. I go, okay, she's not coming back.
Right.
I'm not getting married again so fast. So I had this woman come to Montreal to the comedy festival for 3 or 4 days. And I got to admit.
Dennis is a good guy.
I got to admit that was. Feeling pretty cool at my age.
Yeah.
And I told people my grief counselor was coming up, is what I called it. And I had a few people come up, is it really smart to be sleeping with your grief counselor? She's not really my grief counselor. That's what I call her.
Did your daughter approve?
Yeah, my daughter. Yeah, well, the story gets better. And by the way, after my wife died, I went to a grief counselor. It's the same one that married us. Same grief counselor.
Really?
Good night, Las Vegas. We need rim shots. Okay. So let me tell you, here's the story. My friend, Larry, who, my God, I've known for 40 years. He's a good friend of mine. He managed a couple of really famous comedians. My wife and I go to his funeral 3 months before my wife passes away. All and right. Since I was Larry's favorite comic, his widow had me go on at the end. And I know it's not a show, but I got to follow, you know, Billy Crystal and John Lovitz and Dana Carvey.
They're talking about this guy, right?
Oh, my God. The list goes on and on and on. Like, why am I following these guys? I'm not even thinking of it now as a funeral. It's a show. it's like a friar's roast.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
So anyway, I go on at the end. I met his wife, who they've been married for 15 years. I never met her before. And then my wife passed away, like I said, 3 months later. And I invited her. She lives right around the corner from me, literally 5 minutes. In L.A., that's like next door neighbors. To live 5 minutes from somebody, it's unheard of, you know. Because anytime you go anywhere in L.A., you got to get going. You really got to drive. It's always traffic. It's a nightmare. So I called her up. I said, we should just meet for a drink. And we've been dating ever since.
So, you're a guy that used to book you. A guy you knew for years.
He's a big comedy. We produced a lot of movie producers.
You were his favorite comic. Yeah. Now you're sleeping with his widow.
His widow.
Good for you.
Widow with a widower.
That's what happens a lot, doesn't it? You would think that would happen. People would grieve
heard
together.
The rebound thing. But that's nothing. Neither of us wanted a relationship. I was not looking.
No.
I was single literally for 6 months.
Obviously, your grief counselor's pretty hot, too. So that'd have been nice.
Grief counselor's hot. But this, I've been single for 6 months.
How old is that grief counselor?
Well, she's a bit older now. I'd be in her 20s probably. I think she was 30 when I met her, but whatever. That was a quick. I just want to make sure I could still do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Was she on some TV show?
She's done some porn.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you can see that on TV, technically. It's not a series. It's not on, like, Who's the Boss or something. Although we played that game.
Yeah, we did. Now are you in a relationship where you can't have fun on the road?
I can't, no.
After all this time of being married.
I know.
And tied down. Well, although, you know, you always bitched about that.
I always bitched about it.
As part of the act, get it.
Yes.
But now you are actually technically a single man, and you got a woman in L.A., and now you can't cheat on her.
But, you know, here's the problem with that, too. I don't want to. She really keeps me busy, this gal.
Got it.
But you know,
and now you can tell us whether or not you fooled around on the road.
What was that?
While you were married. Did you ever fool around the road?
A couple of times, but very rarely.
Yeah.
When you meet something like that, you know, the grief counselor.
I'm looking at her, man. You know, I'm leaving it up, by the way.
It's really, you know, because if you don't do that, then you go home and you really want to kill your wife. If you do it, then you feel so guilty and nice to your wife. That's how I looked at it.
Yeah,
the few times, 30 years of marriage, I was really good. You know, you're a stand-up comic and popular and handsome and funny as I am. Millions and millions of women. I say you get one or two.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
God knows Gene Simmons did it, Mick Jagger did it, Bobby Slate can do it.
Bobby Slate can do it for sure, man.
But I think Gene and his wife had kind of an agreement.
She just didn't want to hear about it, obviously.
You know, and if all those women wanted Gene, it was only because he was so famous and all that stuff. But
so now you met this new woman. I shouldn't say a new woman. That's the first time you ever met her, right?
I met her at her husband's funeral. It was bizarre.
That is bizarre.
You
and
know?
Now you're together.
And look, I loved my wife very much, and she loved her husband, but we're a better fit than I was with my wife.
Do you think it works because you both lost your spouses?
No, I think that we were, and I don't want to get as corny as this, but she always says to me, I think you're my soulmate. And I'm thinking, cellmate. You know, although cellmates, it's more like when you're married. Soulmate, what's the difference? Except cellmates have more sex and more freedom than soulmates. No, I really think that we were. What are you, Wicked Witch of the West?
I happen to like that line.
Thank you.
Perhaps I was the only one in the room, but I liked it better than everyone else.
Cellmates have more sex.
No, but we really, and I hate to say that, you know.
That's okay.
But she and I get along so great.
You didn't move in together, right? She lives 5 minutes away, so she stayed there.
5 minutes away, she's got the most gorgeous home, and I got a gorgeous home. And, you know, she can't leave her dog alone. I can't bring my dog to her house because the dog pees all over her house. I don't know why he does that in her house.
Right.
So I have to, we have our separate residences. You know, here's the thing that my girlfriend's really worried about. Because all those years that you guys have known me, I've done so many wife jokes in my house.
Yes, you have.
And she is panicked that I'm going to do girlfriend jokes.
Right.
And
they're coming. About
it, but well, it's new, though. Now she's a soulmate.
A cellmate.
Here's the thing. The jokes about my late wife were all about oral sex.
Right.
They were about my wife never giving me back rubs, dinner.
Right.
And this woman does this for me every day.
Oh.
And I said, as long as you stick to the plan, but if you veer off course, you will see fire and fury like the world has never seen. I think she's pleasing me now out of fear, not love. But after all these years of not getting that, it doesn't matter why she's doing it or how she's doing it.
Whatever works.
I don't care what her motives are, as long as I'm getting it. But
dude, how long did it take you to not feel guilty about seeing somebody? Now, having sex is different. Like you said, your wife passed away.
3 months later, sex. That okay. was all that.
I know, but that was just sex. Right. But did you ever feel guilty actually getting involved and actually caring about somebody?
They said, I don't know who says
not this grief counselor, your real grief counselor.
Right, right. Not a bad one.
Okay.
But who said that... Oh, and you asked me before if my daughter gets along with her. Right. They get along great.
How's the family react?
Well, my wife, my late wife was making jewelry, just you know, more costume jewelry, and started to sell it on the internet. And my girlfriend now is a beautiful, you know, jewelry store in Beverly Hills.
All right.
She doesn't like me talking about it, but...
your girlfriend has... Maybe she has her own stream of income then, right?
Oh, major.
Good. And there you go.
And
good.
She, well, she's not rich, but,
she's
doing okay. But, right. but you know, she put a few of the women went to the Emmys. And they'd come in and get her jewelry. So mm-hmm. anyway, the fact that she's in the jewelry business, and my wife is in the jewelry business, my daughter wanted to get into that a little bit, was dabbling. I think that's something in common there.
Got it. All right.
And so everything was fine. But you asked me, they say, and I don't know who they are, that after you lose your spouse, you're not supposed to get married for a year. That's what... I don't know if that's a
Jewish
thing, an American thing.
Yeah.
But so nobody says you can't start dating.
No, hell no, no. I got no problem. I mean, like, to each his own. I told you off the air because we were talking about Dennis Hoff, that how my dad went to see Dennis Hoff three times because Dennis Hoff, we couldn't go because we were married.
You could have gone.
But my mom died at 57. My dad was only 58 when it happened.
Right.
A year later, he did hook up with this woman, and she was a she-devil from hell, and they were together a little bit. They broke up. I got no problem with that, because you get back on the horse. You're young. You're a young guy. My dad was only 58. My three sisters were a little weird about him dating right away. I said, no.
I was going to say, weren't they?
They were a little weird at first, but I'm a guy. I'm coming from a different angle. I said, Dad is only 58.
Right.
That's 3 years younger than Bobby right now.
Right.
And Bobby,
right.
you were 60 when she died, right?
Right.
Yeah, and there's
exactly.
no book for that.
No.
You know, people grieve differently.
No.
But again, if you're 90 and your spouse dies,
you ain't getting laid.
You only need a girlfriend to change your diapers and cut your meat. I mean, what do you, I don't, so in a way, at least I'm still alive.
Yes.
But the whole thing was so bizarre. Here was the most bizarre point. Why 2016 was the worst year of my life and the best year.
Okay.
Because 2 weeks after my wife died, literally 2 weeks after she died, I went to work for Woody Allen on a TV show he did for Amazon, which nobody saw, called A Crisis in Six Scenes.
Yeah. We knew you were in it. We talked about it. Yeah.
It's really very funny. I had a harbor of youth. Lewis Black had a few nice scenes.
Right.
Judy Gold, Joy Behar. But I had a big scene with Woody. And I don't know if it's years of drug abuse or I have ADD or I'm old, whatever it is. I hate acting because I can't remember my lines.
Yeah.
And this
but you've acted in a ton of stuff.
Well, this is a 7-page scene with Woody.
Oh.
And I went to two different acting coaches, and both of them said to me, you know, this is a hard part for a real actor. I don't know how you're going to do it. And they said it really, not so many words. Like, you know, this would be a hard part for me. Yeah, good luck. And that's why I'm here. What are you? You're supposed to be helping me. Not
see,
discouraging.
How do you? I mean, I haven't seen the scene. I do want to go watch it now because. But how do you act opposite Woody? Because you know. He's a lot older than you, but they're very similar dudes. Similar acting styles, too, I would think.
Well, the thing with the part, Woody was just like, I have this mental breakdown in this restaurant.
And who are you?
And I'm his writing partner.
Got it.
So he's just babbling on and on and on.
Seven-page dialogue.
Not to give an acting lesson here, but when you listen to what the other person said, how are you? Okay, then you don't have to memorize the line because the next line would be, I'm fine, how are you?
Right.
You know, what time is it? You're supposed to listen.
Okay.
So he's all over the place.
Right.
He has nothing to do with anything. So now I got to remember 7 pages and not even know what he's talking
about. And it's tough for a real actor to memorize.
Two coaches or something.
Two coaches.
So on and on. Okay. So I had, here was the greatest part of working for Woody. Well, I knew the guy.
Now, 7 pages translates to what? 10 minutes?
It's about a 5-minute scene.
Okay.
That's long.
Still long.
Sure.
It's a long scene. And again, it was just him and I in the scene. But I was lucky because I had 2 months to work on it.
Got it.
Because he wasn't, that's long. Usually I have like a week or two.
How'd you get the gig? They wanted a Bobby Slayton type and he happened to be available.
I was in Mexico bringing my wife home on a plane after she got hit by a car.
Yeah.
She was sitting next to me, broke her hip. And I just had the pages faxed to me, and I'm looking at this going, you know, I'm listening to my poor wife moaning, and I'm going, I'm never going to be able to memorize this. And I had 6 weeks work on it, and I worked on it every day, like I was shooting it the next day. I worked on it with fellow actors.
Mm-hmm.
I called up Richard Lewis, who gave me a great piece of advice, which I forgot what it was. I called up Richard, and he said something to me that was, And I don't remember. It was like 3 days before I shot it. And
I love the conversation between you and Richard Lewis. A fly on the wall there would have been great. How about a call?
Did Richard read Woody's part?
Yeah. No, he didn't.
One neurotic. He didn't work another neurotic part.
Another couple of John Lovitz worked on it with me. Lovitz worked with Woody in another movie. I forgot which Lovitz was in.
But you didn't tell me actually how you got the role. I mean, did you audition or they wanted you?
No, it's weird. Here's another weird story.
Because there's plenty of actors out there.
No, I got it because I've known Woody for about 5 years.
Got it.
And we have a mutual friend in New York. And the friend lives down the street from Woody. And Woody comes to his house all the time for dinner. He's some big business guy. And he invites me over one day. And I have dinner with him and Woody and Sun Yi. Very nice lady, by the way. And we have dinner. And then Woody said he had such a good time. He goes, next time you're in New York, you might want to bring a couple more comedians. So I bring Louis Black, David Brenner was still alive. Woody brought Dick Cavett. And then David Blaine showed up halfway through dinner and started showing us magic tricks.
That's a wild scene.
I wish he took a picture.
Yeah.
And it was like a four-hour dinner, and it was just great. And then we did it again. I brought some other comedians. And, you know, for Woody to be in town, for my friend to be in town, for me to be in New York, to try to corral a bunch of comedians because everybody's on the road. Mm-hmm. But we did another one. And I just became friends with Woody. And everybody goes, oh, he's going to put you in something. He's eventually going to put you in something. And you know, went on for 5 years, never put me in anything. And I'd always about to do another movie. And why? Then he called me to do it. And I just, you know, he looked at my acting reel and I did it. But he was a great, right after I shot it, 3 weeks later, I'm in another comedy club and Woody Allen's producer calls and goes, Woody wants you in his new movie. Colin Quinn had broke his leg or something.
Okay.
Sprained his leg playing basketball with Adam Sandler or something.
Right.
And he goes, Colin can't do the part. So maybe because I sound like Colin.
Yeah, yeah, you do. Yeah.
B. Arthur's dead. Who else are you going to get? You know, Harvey Fierstein's too gay. So, Slayton. You know,
Slightly.
He called me up and I got to do a Woody Allen movie. Comes out in December called Wonder Wheel.
Excellent.
So,
all right. So that by 2016 was really good for your career, bad for your personal life.
No, great for my personal life because that's when I met my girlfriend also. So I met my girlfriend.
I'll talk about your wife dying.
No, but it was bad. But you said no, my personal life was great. And my wife died, but meeting my girlfriend was great. So that kind of almost canceled each other out. Kind of.
Hold that thought. Bobby Slayton.
You're tuned to the greatest tool show on earth.
You know what I'm talking about. Oh.
It's the Todd and Tyler Radio Empire.